Yes, 90.3 FM on a Wednesday afternoon. This is Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour is one of 10 public affairs programs that you can hear Monday through Friday. Shows such as Radio Parallax, It's About You, and This Week in Science are bound to intrigue and inform you, perhaps outrage you. Well, if you don't like one of the shows, come on down here and volunteer for one of your own. We'd be glad to have you. 14 Lower Freeborn on the UC Davis campus and serving the entire Sacramento Valley. My name is Dr. Andy, and every week I do Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, a radio show that introduces you to poets, pundits, professionals, professors, and peers of mine. One such peer is Eric Paul Schaefer. He's a poet and a novelist and an essayist and a man of letters. He's on the live line, phoning from Hawaii. He's got a new novel out. He's going to tell us about it. Then later on, we're going to hear about such topics such as women's basketball here on campus at the University of California at Davis. And we will meet two of the editors of Nameless Magazine. Jane Wilson and Teresa Pham will be coming down here, and I'm going to make one of them read something of their own. And then tonight, Pam Houston reads her fiction at Bistro 33's Poetry Night. What an exciting hodgepodge of literary activity I have to share with you, the listener of everybody's favorite poetry and technology program. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Here's Dave Frischberg.
I'll be late getting home from the office, and so will you, 'cause we both got a million calls to return and a million things to do. We're not seeing enough of each other, 'cause truth be told, we're up to our ears in our careers, and we're putting our hearts on hold. So, darling, let me bring you up to speed. A little time together's what we need. Quality time. We both deserve a little quality time. I know a small hotel, remote and quiet. If they decide to sell, my firm could buy it. Then we develop it and gentrify it. We're talking quality time. Quality time. We both have earned a little quality time.
Thanks for sharing your quality time with me this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. This is Dave Frischberg, who I heard celebrating the songs of Ronnie Mercer this morning on Fresh Air on another radio network. Dave Frischberg was introduced to me by Will Lehman, my algebra / trigonometry / American literature teacher. You might hear him as a regular commentator on All Things Considered. He's also a jazz critic on PopMatters.com. My first guest this afternoon, though, is none other than Eric Paul Schaefer. Eric Paul Schaefer is author of 5 books of poetry, most recently Lahaina Noon, which received an award of excellence in the Hawaii Book Publishers Association's 2006 Ka Palapala Po'okela Book Awards. More than 250 of his poems have been published in local, national, and international magazines and in the anthologies 100 Poets Against the War and The Soul Unearthed. His short fiction appears in Bamboo Ridge, Bakunin, Prozax, A Natural Bridge, and in two chapbooks of fiction selected from Burn and Learn, You Are Here, Obscure Publications, and The Felony Stick, Leaping Dog Press. His novel, Burn and Learn, was published by Leaping Dog Press on November 5th. I'm very pleased that he could join us here on this radio show to talk about his latest publication. Eric Paul Schaefer, welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Aloha, and I am very pleased to be here myself.
Aloha. Let's tell folks that you are an Aggie. You graduated from UC Davis with a degree in creative writing. Was that in 1990?
I graduated in 1991, and it wasn't a degree in creative writing.
Aha.
It was actually a doctorate in American literature.
Oh, I see. All right. So you got your Ph.D. here at UC Davis.
Yes, I did.
You finished just about the time that I started, which is why we didn't know each other so well back in the day. And now you've got 5 books under your belt.
Yes, and man, is it crowded there.
I'm sure it is. Good job for you, Eric. And your brand new book is Book and Learn. Burn and Learn. I always think of your books as brimming with delightful poems, but now you're going down a fictional bent as well. You probably work on many of these projects simultaneously.
Exactly, and that's one of the interesting things is how they cross-fertilize, so to speak.
Say some more about that.
Well, you know, I've been working on Burn and Learn. I think I started in 1985, actually sitting in the old coffee house in the student union.
Yeah.
I wrote the first words of this book. And at the same time, I was writing some of the poems that were published in Portable Planet and other earlier chapbooks. And I found that what I was really interested in about fiction was the making sentences part. In fact, when I went to my office to write this later in my life, or to finish writing it, I would tell Veronica, I'm going to the office to make some sentences. And that's how I built this book, was basically sentence by sentence, which is also the way I think of building poetry. So they were built in a very similar way.
Interesting. So tell me about a little bit about your workaday life. I know that you've been a lifelong student. You've done a lot of teaching. You've worked other sorts of jobs as well. And fitting in time to work on novel projects and novel books of poetry. Tell us a little bit more about what fills up your day when you're not writing.
Well, these days I am, what do we call myself, an instructor at Honolulu Community College, which is a wonderful campus downtown in Honolulu, where we have vocational and degree arts programs. And we've been having just a blast. I have the best. You will not believe this, Andy, because I think you probably think the same thing. But I have the best colleagues in the world.
Wonderful.
They are cheery and fun and insightful and a blast to discuss things with. And then after that, we have the best students as well. So it is a great place to work. And after Japan, I wasn't sure I'd ever be able to say that, but I am. This is a great place to be. So I haven't really worked that many different jobs. Mainly, I've been a teacher,
right,
and a writer my whole life. I know I really envy the people who can write, you know, stuff like he worked on a freighter, and then he was worked on an oil rig in the Arabian Sea and all that. I didn't do any of that stuff. I taught in Japan on Okinawa, and I taught in California, and I taught in New Mexico, you know, and that's pretty much it. Now I'm teaching in Hawaii.
You're an itinerant teacher who's glad to have found a tropical home.
There you are. I'm a. What is it? What was it, Emerson? You say a scholar gypsy or a gypsy scholar?
I think it was gypsy scholar.
There you
that
go.
Sounds
I'll take
familiar.
It. I'll take it.
Excellent. Well, Eric Paul Schaefer is my guest. Do you live in Honolulu?
I do live in Honolulu now. I used to live on Maui for 10 years. But
that's
now
right.
I'm here.
So he is a Honolulu-based poet and author of. I almost said a brand new novel, but it's a novel that's years in the making called Burn and Learn. Tell us, Eric Paul Schaefer, about Burn and Learn. How much of the story do you want to give us a hint of so people might be tempted to check it out?
I can tell you the whole thing because it won't matter.
Okay.
This is why Burn and Learn was fun for me to write and a challenge. And that is, you know how most of the time we think of reading a novel as kind of like a train ride. You get on at the beginning, you move along the tracks from station to station, from chapter to chapter,
right,
usually in one direction, maybe a little switchback and backtracking until you reach a destination, right? Well, the metaphor for this book is stargazing. There's 167 short chapters, And you can look at any one of them and then look at any other one of them and then any other one and make a pattern out of those. You can join them together in big groups or in small groups. You can read all the ones in a certain theme. Like I have a number of tales that are based on the trickster figure of Coyote.
Right.
You can read all those, and then you could read all of the ones that are related to Captain Renew and Agent Orange, and then you can read whatever else you want to. So you can jump around in this novel, and I think that is its strength. It allows you to create the novel. Basically, it's kind of a novel in a box that you want to read, and you don't even have to read the whole thing.
Well, it sounds wonderful. And tell me a little bit about the publisher of Burn and Learn.
Well, Leaping Dog Press is a very small press in North Carolina, and my friend Jordan Jones has been the publisher of that since it started, and he has moved around with this press. It was in California, it was in Virginia, and now it's in North Carolina.
I remember that because he's been on this radio show, and he's someone else who I remember from my earliest years in the graduate program here at UC Davis.
Oh, that's great. You know, Jordan is such a well-read person, and he's very, very smart, and I love to have plenty of discussions with him. I used to love it when he would come visit me on Maui because we had, like, the whole afternoon to just talk about literature, read things out loud, critique them, that sort of stuff. He's a very, very wise man. I have to say that, too, because he's published four of my books, right?
Sure, so he's obviously got good judgment.
Yeah. And I'm glad he's been on your show. He has a lot of very smart things to say about the publishing world.
Definitely. Well, I need to take a quick public service announcement break, but I hope you'll stick around, Eric, because I want to hear a little bit more about your novel, and then also, as the price of admission on today's show, I made you promise to read a poem to listeners as well.
I will be delighted to do so. I'll be right here.
Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, you've tuned in to KDVS on a Wednesday afternoon. My name is Dr. Randy, and this is Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back. The water leaf at Landmark Park reminds us that during the holidays, the elderly are often the forgotten people in our community. If you know a senior citizen with nutritional or transportation needs, lend a hand. If you know a senior with little or no family, lend your heart. Be one who cares and give your time. This message is brought to you by the Water Leaf at Land Park in Sacramento. You may reach them at 916-394-9400. They're on the air because they care about the welfare of our seniors. And now, a word from our sponsor.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
We'll be back in a moment with Eric Paul Schaefer, but speaking of great fiction writers, I'd like to let you know that Pam Houston will be reading tonight at the Poetry Night at Bistro 33 reading series. Pam Houston is the author of two collections of short stories, Cowboys Are My Weakness and Waltzing the Cat. Her stories have been selected for volumes of Best American Short Stories, the O. Henry Awards, the Pushcart Prize, and Best American Short Stories of the Century. Her first novel, Sighthound, was published by Norton in January of 2005. She's the winner of the Western States Book Award, the Willa Award for Contemporary Fiction, and the Evil Companions Literary Award, which I wish were only the case for me as well. That's tonight, Wednesday, November 18th at 9 o'clock at Bistro 33 in Davis, 226 F Street. The open mic begins at 10 p.m. Eric Paul Schaefer is my guest. He's phoning in from Honolulu, Hawaii. And we are talking about his brand new novel, which is called Burn and Learn. So, Eric, do you have the novel there? And is there a representative passage that you could share with listeners?
I'm glad you asked for a representative passage, because one of the ways that we kicked this book off at the publication celebration is I assembled a handful of my favorite paragraphs and read paragraphs instead of entire chapters, because, you know, it's a different kind of book, so
right.
We do a different kind of reading. So how about if I read you a paragraph?
Let's hear one.
Okay. Casey writes to me occasionally when she's not working or studying or playing, since she likes to get letters from me, even though she lives only a few blocks away. One day, Casey writes, "One out of every 10,000 babies is born with a tail, and I think you were one of them. They cut the tail off at birth and usually don't tell the mother. You have a scar back there, as I recall. My bathroom mirror is mounted on the wall at a height where most faces fall. So when I pull my pants down to examine what's left of my tailbone, I can't see my butt or my backbone because the angle's wrong, and my head won't turn far enough around anyway. Maybe Barbie or Reagan McNeil could, but they wouldn't need to. Even with a hand mirror, I can't see the mark, because the complexity of reflective angles defeats my desire to examine my body's geography. The mystery remains right where anybody but me can see it."
Oh, that's fun.
I'm hoping that everybody finds this novel fun. That's mainly what it's supposed to be.
So when you think about representative paragraphs or samples, and you think of smaller paragraphs, is part of you still thinking like a poet, even though you've compiled this big novel and you've been reading from it as part of the celebration of the publication?
I do indeed think that I'm thinking like a poet as I'm doing fiction, and that makes it much easier to pull a paragraph or even a line out and say, listen to this, because I know what it has in it and how it was constructed and what the point of it is, in a different way than most people who write fiction. Now, this is not a slam against fiction writers, but the point of fiction is not usually to focus too much on the sentence. But that is what I made the point in Burn and Learn.
Excellent. Well, speaking of focusing, tuning our focus to something somewhat more specific, I know a lot of folks listening might have also been listening when you've appeared on the show in the past to read your poetry.
Okay.
And I'd love it if you'd share a poem with me and everyone listening on 90.3 FM KDVS this afternoon.
Okay. I would like to read the last poem of my book, Lahaina Noon. All these poems were written about Maui pretty much, and they were all written on Maui.
And Lahaina Noon was recognized for some awards, if I remember correctly, the 2006
yes.
Ka Palapala Po'okela Book Award from the Hawaii Book Publishers Association.
Yes, it was, and you did a very good job on saying that. Not even many people here can say that correctly.
Well, I've been paying attention to you and trying to pick up a thing or two. I spent some time in Poipu on Pe'e Road. And I had to teach my daughter not to call it P Road.
Yeah, I know the road itself, actually.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, this is me looking out over the ocean from Kula, where I used to live.
great.
Called A Blue Curve. On clear days in Kula, over the grassy ridge, past the Kiave tree and a cloud-rippled headland, we see the horizon where sky meets sea, where light touches the dark blue, where sea and sky come together in a line that marks the edge of the world. As a boy, I was told sea and sky never meet. The horizon is an illusion of our vision and the land where we stand, that there are miles of emptiness and clouds between two intimate, familiar hues. Yet now I see there is no separation. The sky starts where the sea starts, face to face, skin to skin. In the surf, the sky curls within the arch of the rising wave, wind sculpting wave, sea weaving sky in a constant curl, each around the other, on the long, luxuriant rush to shore. Many are mistaken about the horizon, too. The blue line bends too slightly to reveal the round. Yet, when we seek the horizon, the gentle arc through every land and sea leads us home. From here, our horizon is a blue curve in a world that encircles us all.
Oh, that's delightful.
Thank you.
I always enjoy hearing your poetry, Eric Schaefer. Give us a quick sense of how, if we wanted to pick up a copy of your most recent book of poetry or a copy of Burn and Learn, how would we go about doing that?
Well, I think the best way probably would to use one of the online bookstores like Amazon.
All right.
Or to write, or to use the online website of Leaping Dog Press. You can also order them from there. Because at this point, we have distribution through Atlas Books and Small Press Distribution and some other folks like that. But I think that since the book was only recently released, it may not be in bookstores yet. So you could probably order it from a bookstore, but it won't be there waiting for you.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad that you've waited until the book was published to come on the radio show. It's been a pleasure to talk with you again about it. And next time we will, because I so enjoyed that last poem, we'll just sit back and swap poems for an hour on the show.
Let us do that.
I think that would be fun.
I'd love to.
All right. Eric Paul Schaefer is the author of a brand new book of fiction called Burn and Learn. He's an Aggie. He graduated in 1991 with a PhD in literature, and he is a resident of Honolulu, Hawaii. Eric Paul Schaefer, thanks so much for coming again on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you for inviting me, and thank you to all your listeners.
Absolutely. Well, folks, we're going to hear now another song by Dave Frischberg from his album Quality Time. This one is called You Would Rather Have the Blues. You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
If every wish you ever make at wishing well or wedding cake comes true, I feel sorry for you. And if at last your ship comes in and fate decides to let you win the prize, I could honestly sympathize. 'Cause happiness could never make you happy. You find contentment only in a frown. And when your lucky star is on the rise, you turn your back and shut your eyes. When things are looking up, you're looking down. You could win the sweeps, win the daily double two, and hit the number on the nose. Go on all the big game shows and come out smelling like a rose. You could win the set of matching luggage. You could win the Acapulco cruise. Still, you'd lose, 'cause you would rather have the blues. Yes, you would rather have the blues. And on your tax return, you could write off all you earn. And when the final buck was spent, the bank would tell you to skip the rent. You don't owe us one red cent. You could be the first to holler bingo. You could be the last to hear bad news. But still you'd lose, 'cause you would rather have the blues. Yes, you would rather have the blues. Dollar bills could float down from the sky. You'd be known as the world's most lucky guy. Any guy given half the chance to choose.
Isn't this fun songwriting? This is Dave Frischberg from his CD Quality Time. He does the piano and vocals on this album. You might know him because he wrote the... Well, you might know him because he's a great pianist and vocalist and lyricist. But you might know him as well from his work done back in the 1970s on behalf of Schoolhouse Rock. He wrote and performed the I'm Just a Bill song. And he's providing some of the background music, the bumper music, on today's edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. But now, on to my next guest. My next guest is Joe Rodriguez. Joe Rodriguez first appeared on this radio show a number of years ago when he was in the national spotlight for finding racist paraphernalia, racist T-shirts and hats at a local big box store, and had to actually bring to the attention of the managers of that store the fact that they were promoting white supremacy with their clothing choices. Joe Rodriguez was then interviewed on a number of radio shows, television programs, and in the newspaper. He also appeared on this radio show. We didn't quite break the story, but we were right there at the forefront. He's a longtime employee of UC Davis and an occasional sports fan, and that's what brings him here to the show this afternoon. Joe Rodriguez, welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hey, Dr. Andy, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm a little under the weather, but I'm surviving quite nicely.
All right, good. My next guest, Jane Wilson, she had a cough recently, but she's also appearing on the show. She's going to be here in the second half hour. But Joe, you're actually not here to plug a book or an album or a project that's going to benefit you financially. But it's my understanding that you have UC Davis's interests in heart this afternoon. Is that accurate?
I do. I'm here to basically plug the women's basketball team. It's kind of a little secret here on campus. It shouldn't be, but it is. But they provide some of the greatest entertainment you'll ever see. I used to be an NBA fan for a while, and then I started... Basically, the reason I'm here is I'm a producer-director, video producer-director, and a friend of mine and colleague and I both produce and direct the Aggie basketball games over at the Arc, and we are responsible for throwing the video up on the big boards there.
Good.
And we've become real fans of women's basketball. And I've basically written off the NBA and most other sports and stuff. I'm not a big sports follower. But when I saw the Aggies play, it just blew me away because it's kind of the only honest basketball you can ever see anymore. We have a team that basically excels, and they play with their hearts. They have to keep their grades up. They're not purchased or anything like a lot of schools do.
Right.
And unfortunately, they don't get a lot of attention, and that's kind of a bad thing, and that's something I'm trying to change with the help of a lot of friends on campus and such. And one thing that's coming up is there's a game with a small school named Stanford on Sunday.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, they're number two in the United States, evidently, and we're going to be playing them. And it became known to us through some of our insider knowledge and connections on campus that they're expecting more Stanford fans at this game than Aggie fans. And that would be a disgrace.
That's outrageous. You mean the game is at the Arc?
And
there
are going to
be more Stanford people than Aggies?
Yeah. They're not promoted very well by the Aggie pack, unfortunately, and they're just unknown. I mean, the year that they went to the finals, they they were playing better than the men's team were. They had a really good record, and nobody really heard about it, which was kind of unfortunate. So we're trying to lift the rock up so people can look and see everything underneath it and try and get some bodies out there. And I think if people go out and see the game, they're going to find out how exciting it is and start coming. And maybe one day we'll pack it for the women. So, I don't know if you're aware of it, but a lot of times women don't get the same attention on campuses across the country as the men do.
I read that somewhere.
Yeah.
And so, but you, you're going to be there on Sunday. What time does this take place?
This game starts at 2 o'clock. You can get there a little bit early. There's free stuff that they like to toss out to the crowds and stuff. There's it's a great team to watch and fun. It's not very expensive. If you're a student, it's free. If you are, which is
we're actually not allowed to mention prices, but we can tell people that if they're students, they've got a free ticket waiting for them at this women's basketball game.
And if you contact the Aggie Pack, which you can by just calling them up, and I believe I just happen to have their number somewhere. Maybe not. At any rate, it's not too expensive to get in if you're a staff member or if you're a professor, as you are. And the general admission, I think, might be a little more for this game because it's Stanford and they're looking as an opportunity. There might be more money involved. So if we can't get enough Aggies, we can at least get some Stanford money or something. I don't know how it works. But at any rate, just so long as Stanford falls, that's all we need. So
that is indeed what we need. Well, I'm heading over to AggiePack.com. And I guess that's where I will send people if they want to find out more about this upcoming event. Tonight, of course, everyone's going to be going to that Cam Houston reading. So they may not make it to the UC Davis versus UC Santa Cruz men's basketball game. But this coming Sunday, it'll be the women.
Sunday, be there, be there.
Women's basketball versus Stanford, Sunday at the UC Davis Pavilion at 2 o'clock. What's the phone number, Joe Rodriguez?
752-8962. That's 752-8962. The Aggie Pack.
8962.
You can buy large quantities of tickets for a lot smaller amount of money.
Excellent. Well, that's good to know. And you're going to be there in a professional capacity?
I'll be there in a professional capacity too. We got a little booth down in the corner, a little door. If people want to come and see how things work and stuff, we would be overjoyed to show them if they don't bother us too much.
Right.
But we'll be there the entire game before and after, and it should be a great event. And I'm sure that if nobody has seen this before and they come and see it, they'll become a fan for life. It's an amazing show.
Excellent.
The girls are great. The women are great. The team is great. The coach, Sandy Simpson, is phenomenal.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to see if I can show up with at least two out of my three kids, and we'll have some new Aggie women's basketball fans before you know it as the Aggie women beat Stanford this coming Sunday, the 22nd of November at 2 o'clock at the UC Davis Pavilion.
Andy, I want to thank you so much for doing this and getting the attention this deserves, because seriously, these are really strong women and they need some help.
Absolutely, and we can remind folks that all Aggie women's basketball games can be heard live on KDVS, 90.3 FM, your campus and community radio station.
Funny how that works.
It sure is. Joe, it's great to have you back on the program. Keep up the good work, and I hope to see you this Sunday, if not before.
I hope so, too.
Take care.
You too.
Well, that was Joe Rodriguez from UC Davis telling us about Aggie Pack hoops and how you can get in the game. Well, now we're going to hear an important message from the Linux Users Group of Davis before we transition over to a conversation with young fiction writer Jane Wilson, who's here in the studios of Dr. Andy's Poetry on Technology Hour. Stick around.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019 or via email at root@lugod.org.
This experimental jazz that we're listening to is by the Joel Futterman Quartet from his CD Vision in Time. This is the title track from this CD from Silkheart Records. The Joel Futterman Quartet. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS. Reminding you that I'm going to be at an event this evening, and you may want to show up as well. It's up to you. But the great Pam Houston will be reading her fiction at 9 o'clock tonight at Bistro 33's ongoing reading series called Poetry Night. When the late John Updike was deciding which short stories should be included in short stories representing the entire century, the entire 20th century in American fiction, he chose a story, not surprisingly, by Pam Houston. Pam will be reading her fiction this evening, starting a little bit after 9. The show starts at 9. There'll be an opening act. Pam Houston will read. There'll be a break. And then the open mic begins at 10 o'clock. So there's room for you to participate. You show up early enough and get your name on the list. Well, someone who would be on anyone's open mic list is my next guest. Her name is Jane Wilson. Jane Wilson is an undergraduate at UC Davis. She's an English major. She's a Francophile. And she is the fiction editor of Nameless Magazine, the undergraduate journal of creative writing at UC Davis. She's also worked at The Onion. She's taken lots of difficult, challenging English classes, which she loves. And she's written dozens and dozens of short stories, a little excerpt of which we'll hear later on in this half hour. Jane Wilson, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hi.
And welcome back, I should say, because you were on this show about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
When you were here to discuss the merger between Produce, the previous iteration of the Undergraduate Journal of Creative Writing, mm-hmm. and Nameless.
Yeah, it was.
So tell us a little bit about Nameless Magazine. What website would we visit if we wanted to find out more while you and I are chatting about Nameless?
It has a really simple web address. It's just namelessmagazine.com.
Okay.
www.namelessmagazine.com, whatever. And I guess we really started in spring 2007. The founding editors and I, we were in our freshman year at Davis. And interestingly enough, we were all produce rejects at the time. We all submitted our short stories and poems to go into the upcoming issue of Produce, and we didn't get in. We were a little miffed, but that's not why we started our own thing.
Right. It wasn't like a revenge fantasy.
Oh, no. It was, okay. I mean, that was on our minds, but it wasn't the real reason. We just, Produce set up a really good example with the journal, and we wanted to do something more community-based.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started Nameless. We were originally called Karen Magazine. Not a lot of people know that. But then this strange magazine in the UK was also called Karen, and we didn't want to steal. And also, they, totally stole our name. So decided...
They might have already staked out, the web address.
Yeah, exactly. So we decided we would, just... start another thing.
So you would do away with names and be nameless.
Yeah.
Tricky.
It would have been easier if we actually had a name.
Right.
But we don't like making it easy for ourselves, I guess.
Well, as you know, as an English major, both Michel Foucault and Roland Barthes have written about the death of the author.
This is true. Actually, that's my favorite essay.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'm glad I brought it up so you could chime right in. But this is, in a strange way, the death of the literary journal. Because it's a journal, yes, but it is nameless.
That was very Derridian thing to say. We're leaving marks all over the place.
Sure.
Signs and plays. I don't know what we're doing. But so we started that, and I've been fiction editor pretty much ever since. Going on power trips every Sunday at fiction board meetings.
I'm sure.
My favorite part of the week.
Do you often find that you're slamming your fist on the table?
No. Well, we actually have been getting really good fiction submissions this quarter, so I'm very excited.
Great.
And our print issue is actually coming out at the end of the month, our new one. We have our 08-09 print issue on sale pretty much everywhere, but you can find stacks of them at Newsbeat on whatever street that is. I'm sorry.
That's on 3rd Street?
Yeah, there we go. I'm bad with streets.
That's fine. That's on 3rd Street between D and E, on the south side of the street here in the city of Davis.
I would not have known that.
So you can find copies of the most recent edition over at Newsbeat, and then the brand new one is due out any week now.
Yep, by the end of the month.
That's great.
Yeah.
So what's the relationship between the Nameless Magazine website and Nameless Magazine, the paper journal that you pay for?
We publish quarterly issues online,
yeah.
And for every issue we have a featured prose, which would be anything from creative nonfiction, an essay, or short stories. We get short stories more often. We have a featured prose, and then we have a featured poem. And the featured from every quarter go in the print issue, as well as the best short stories and poems and art. We also publish art. I forgot to mention that. Wow, that was lame. But we also publish art, and all that goes into the magazine annually.
That's great. So it's a journal. It's got a web iteration, and soon the new one will be available in print. Do you all? What other sorts of work do you do in the community? Do you ever host events?
We host quarterly workshops.
Yeah.
We just had one in November. No, in October. It's November now, isn't it?
I should have brought my calendar.
Yeah, so I need to get
it
together
while we're chatting.
But we had one last month, and then we're gonna have our next one next quarter, sometime in February or March. And then we also have a quarterly reading. It's more of a showcase, really, because we also have a gallery of all the artists we know who like to submit their stuff and
right.
everything. And that's called Expression Redefined. And that's actually coming up next week on Tuesday, November 24th. Starts at 6:30 and probably going to last until 10 because we've got quite a few performances lined up.
So it's almost like a variety show.
It is. It's a lot of fun. Birdstrike Theater, if anyone is a huge fan, which I am, they're pretty awesome.
They're great. Let's tell folks before we get too far into the collection of performers, where does this take place?
Griffin Lounge. And the Memorial Lounge. Union at on campus at UC Davis.
On the UC Davis campus, right. And I guess one of the best ways to get there, you could park downtown and walk due west, and you'll run into the Memorial Union. Or you can park in the parking structure on the north end of campus and then walk south. And again, you'll hit the Memorial Union. You'll find the Griffin Lounge. It's where the fireplace is.
I guess.
Yeah.
That just went over my head. Okay. I don't drive.
Right. So, and you don't bike either, I understand.
I don't know how to ride a bike.
Right.
I know. It's sad.
So, so you're a big fan of the bus?
I am. And of walking?
Yeah.
Big fan
of yeah.
walking.
Excellent. All right, good. And so Birdstrike Theater is going to be there. I know and love Birdstrike Theater, but not everyone knows who that is. So tell us.
They're an improv and sketch comedy group. At Davis, they do a lot of... They do their own show every quarter. I actually think they have one coming up on this Friday. But,
They're remarkably funny.
They are. They're really good. Actually, Mike Lane, the old leader of Birdstrike, or whatever you would call him,
mm-hmm.
He is actually moving on to Chicago to do some stand-up right now. So that's their thing. Lots of sketch comedy, lots of fun, lots of improv. Kind of like the stuff you would see on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Right.
Anybody remembers that show?
Yeah, and I think it's in syndication, so you can probably go find it if you were curious.
Fantastic show.
It is a good show. But you see Birdstrike, and they're populated mostly with UC Davis undergraduates.
Mm-hmm.
But you say to yourself, this is remarkably funny. Like, this is the sort of thing I'd expect to pay a lot of money to go see.
Yeah.
And there they are up on stage making it up right in front of you. So... It's a delight. So Birdstrike will be there, and who else?
Sixbits, which is the UC Davis Slam Poetry Collective.
Yeah, and Spoken Word Collective.
Mm-hmm. They're going to do a set for us, and then the Imaginary Zebra, which is a clothing line headed by my friend Benson Chow. He's also designing nameless T-shirts. I love that guy. He is going to do a little fashion show or a little video thing for us. We don't actually know what he's doing, but we trust him. Just let
right.
him do whatever he wants. So a lot of people are going to be there, as well as I believe some faculty members are supposed to show up. You're supposed to show.
I'm going to be there. It's next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And then you'll be there. And will you be reading something? Will you be emceeing? Will you be making announcements? What's your function going to be, Jane Wilson?
Usually what I do at Nameless Expression Redefined is I stand by the door and kind of bounce to make sure that no one goes in and out during performances. And then usually I read. I don't know if I am this quarter. They're trying to make me read.
Right. I can see why, because I've heard your fiction. I'm making you read in a few minutes.
This is true. That's why I'm nervous. But
and you might read something at the Pam Houston event tonight at the open mic.
I may or may not.
Or you may.
Or I may.
I guess that's what may means.
But yeah, so I will be there, as well as the other nameless kids. We'll be selling copies of the magazine.
Right.
Probably some T-shirts, maybe stickers. If you're into sticking stuff on things.
I am. Now, is it a for-profit operation, this Nameless magazine?
No, absolutely not.
Well, why don't you say something about that? So
we have absolutely no money after we print our annual print issue.
Right.
We get our money from the Davis English Department, which I believe they're cutting us off. Next year because of funding,
right.
The whole funding crisis and stuff. So we're not going to be getting funds from the English Department. What we did last year, and the only other source of income we have is the club finance council grant every year or so. I think they give out two every year, once in the winter and once in the spring. And that's it. And then we print the issues. Usually nobody buys them. It's really sad. And then we start all over again.
But people will buy them this time around.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think they will. Well, let's take a quick break because I want you to time your anxiety. We've got we're going to hear some fiction.
No.
By Jane Wilson, who's my guest here in the studio. She is the fiction editor of Nameless Magazine. And then we're also, I understand that she knows something about this, Pam Houston, who's going to be reading tonight at Bistro 33 at 9 o'clock, and we'll ask Jane about that as well. This is KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. Let's hear a quick message about the Shriners Hospitals. We'll be right back.
For children in hospitals who face days or even weeks of recovery time, homework does more than keep them up to date in school. It can provide a sense of normalcy and focus. While most of a child's stay involves physical recovery and healing, schoolwork can help boost mental health. It can remind children that their familiar daily routine still exists outside the hospital. At Shriners Hospitals, this type of continuous learning is either provided by teachers from local school districts or by teachers on staff at the hospital. Shriners Hospitals provide free orthopedic and burn treatment to children under 18. If you know a child Shriners can help, call 1-800-237-5055 or visit www.shrinershq.org.
Listening to the Joel Futterman Quartet here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Jane Wilson is here, and she's been clamoring for weeks to let me have her on her show so she can read her fiction. And evidently she may be reading something tonight as well at this Pam Houston event. Jane, mm-hmm. Who is Pam Houston to you?
Pam Houston is my favorite professor at the UC Davis Creative Writing Department faculty. I don't know what I'm saying, but she's awesome. She's fantastic. She knows she cares so much about her students.
I think she's a good writer as well.
Of course. You know,
it's a leading question. You're supposed to say some more about it now.
Well, I don't get interviewed a lot.
That's fine. That's why I'm giving you these extra.
But she's written two collections of short stories, I believe a collection of essays, several collections of essays, and she's been published everywhere. Best American Short Stories, Best American Short Stories of the Century, which I believe Andy mentioned a few minutes ago. And I mean, she's a really accomplished. She's a big fish.
She is a big fish
in the Davis pond.
Yeah. When I told friends on Facebook I was looking forward to seeing her read, people who I didn't even think of as rampant literary readers or even literary types, I've been getting emails and Facebook postings saying, "Oh, I just love Pam Houston. I would love to go to that event."
See, I think that's how you know when you've made it.
Right.
As a writer, I think when even like people who aren't really into writing themselves know about you and like your stuff, kind of like Stephen King, although Stephen King isn't, no offense to Stephen King, my favorite writer.
Right.
Personally.
I don't know if he would take offense at that. but you're right. I mean, there's a name that people know.
Right.
And like Stephen King, who writes, I think, for Entertainment Weekly.
He does
like film reviews and commentary.
He should give me a job.
The guy's a writing machine, and he's also very generous. He set up like all these parks in Bangor, Maine, where he lives, for like the local kids to enjoy.
Well, that's very sweet.
Yeah, but what I was going to say about him is, I don't know, I saw him read when I was about your age, a little bit younger, and that was a big deal. That was a lot of fun to
see
him read.
Right, because it was Stephen King.
Absolutely, and this is Pam Houston.
It's Pam Houston, which is, I think, is huger than Stephen King.
All right.
That's just my humble opinion.
And so are you coming to this event tonight?
Definitely.
All right, so that's tonight at 9 o'clock at Bistro 33's Poetry Night. So speaking of great prose, you've got a short story in front of you.
I do.
It looks like it's too long for you to read the whole thing in the time
we
have allotted. But tell us what it's called and what you're going to share with us now.
This is a short story I wrote actually for Pam's class called The State of Things. And I wrote it because I was watching a TV show really late at night. I'm one of those students that, I don't know, drinks too much Red Bull during the day and just can't go to sleep. But I was watching a TV show about obsessive compulsive disorders and just like psychological disorders and stuff, and there was a woman who was a compulsive hoarder.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt she was getting one dimensionalized on the show because they were kind of representing her as an other and sort of an exotic figure.
Right.
In society. They weren't really giving a well-rounded picture of her, so I decided in my self-righteous mood that I would write a story about a female hoarder. So this is just about a woman who, she works as a housemaid in various people's homes, and she steals things from their houses that she thinks they're not going to miss, little odd things, and she collects them in her apartment. And one day she ends up accidentally kidnapping the son of one of her clients.
Excellent. Well, let's hear an excerpt from this story. And it's called The State of Things?
The State of Things.
The State of Things, ladies and gentlemen, by my guest, Jane Wilson.
The afternoon Sophie took Sid, she really meant to steal something else. Earlier in the day, when the soon-to-be former Mrs. Fosdyke had given her a large cardboard box and asked her to help pack the fine china and the dining sets in the upper left-hand cabinet above the stove, Sophie had her eye on a cheap plastic plate she had found behind a tall stack of red square soup bowls and floral-patterned bone china dishes. Its round ochre face was scratched in places and decorated with black and blue tiki masks that returned Sophie's stare with six pairs of flat black eyes shaped into soft-cornered right triangles and parallelograms, pleading with her for a chance to be conveniently misplaced and properly displayed. So later, when Mrs. Fosdyke tearfully abandoned a half-full box of pots and porcelain wedding china upon hearing Mr. Fosdyke's approaching footsteps on the front porch, Sophie took the opportunity to inch back toward the cabinet, empty then, save for the tiki plate she had purposely stranded in disturbed dust, with a silent apology and a promise to come back. Sophie was careful with her approach, tossing the occasional look over her shoulder out the kitchen doorway and into the living room, where Mr. Fosdyke stood with his thin lips pursed and his arms crossed, a tall, skinny, graying picture of disinterested composure placed on the opposite side of a nondescript coffee table from Mrs. Fosdyke, whose arms flailed and whose muffin-topped cartoon character hips probably should have seen her husband's affair coming. Sophie stood still and watched, her hands poised above the door of the cabinet, remembering with sympathy that before any yelling had commenced in the Fosdyke home, they had been a relatively quiet family, Mr. Fosdyke, a successful insurance agent who worked even on the Saturdays Sophie came by to clean, though now it was clear to everyone what he had really been doing. Mrs. Fosdyke, a true friend to domesticity whose chief concerns were the joy of cooking collection and doilies, and their son Sid, a 70-year-old near recluse who preferred his room above all other areas of the house. In general, they had given Sophie little reason to complain, especially since the Fosdyke home was never in want of major cleaning, though Mrs. Fosdyke had insisted on hiring her anyway. Now, in addition to the incessant arguing, the comfortable two-story, three-bedroom home suddenly resembled a haphazard storage room. Last week, when the divorce papers had been officially filed, Mrs. Fosdyke had booked Sophie for every afternoon and had since tweaked her job description to include finding, taping, and packing boxes. And though Mrs. Fosdyke had made sure to take her time, the labeled boxes soon obstructed the view of the widescreen plasma television Mr. Fosdyke claimed as his and contained everything from the George Foreman grill Mrs. Fosdyke had bought her husband for his recent birthday to the couple's framed wedding portrait, which often reminded Sophie, as she dusted and cleaned its desk, its glass surface, of a photograph her grandmother had shown her of her own parents' wedding. Today marked the final afternoon of Sophie's employment at the Fosdyke home, and parked in the driveway was Mrs. Fosdyke's rented U-Haul truck. She had saved the dining room for last, she said, as a way of telling Mr. Fosdyke that she hoped he knew how he was going to eat, and Sophie's taped box of red bowls and bone china dishes served as a definitive conclusion to the week-long ordeal. But as the couple raged and carried on behind her, Sophie guessed that for them, at least the residue of these arguments would stay. And so upon finding the couple truly preoccupied, she turned back around, opened the cabinet door, fished out the tiki plate, and moved to close it again, when she was startled to find that, careful as she was, she had failed to notice Sid. He was sitting, owlish, on a lone black stool by the kitchen counter with his head cocked, his socked feet swinging, and his eyes round and wide behind his wire-rimmed glasses. He blinked at Sophie, lifting his shoulders to his ears and burying his neck in the collar of his green polo shirt and argyle sweater vest. Sophie's ex-boyfriend Tim had always joked that children who attended private school were branded with an invisible yuppie seal that manifested itself in every facet of their appearance. She looked back at him guardedly, fearing for a moment that he would scream above the disquieting arguments of his parents and reveal her intentions with a tiki plate. But Sid remained still, save for the foot he tapped against the leg of the stool, and eventually, with the boy still watching and moving her to guilt, Sophie gingerly placed the tiki plate back inside the cabinet. Is everything okay, Sid?
Well, there you go. So, you left us at a moment of kind of a Clarissa Dalloway-ian sort of cliffhanger. And obviously, we'll have to find the story if we want to find out more. Has this story been published?
No, not yet.
Not yet. So,
I'm optimistic, sort of.
yes, you are, and rightfully so. Jane Wilson has been my guest, and she's been reading an excerpt from her story, The State of Things, on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. And she will be in attendance this evening for the Pam Houston event. She's very excited about it, tonight at Bistro 33, starting at 9 o'clock. And so, Jane, you're going to read something at the open mic then? Is that what we decided over the last few minutes?
Sure. Why not?
Great. Well, you heard it here first. If you want to put a face with the voice, then stop by Bistro 33 tonight to see her, Jane Wilson, read from her story. Now, tell me again the date of Expression Redefined.
Tuesday, November 24th at 6:30 in Griffin Lounge at the Memorial Union on the Davis campus.
Excellent. Jane Wilson, it's been a delight to have you back on the radio show.
I'm very pleased and terrified to be here.
Well, excellent. and I'd also like to thank my previous guests, who are Joe Rodriguez, reminding us all that we are welcome to attend this coming Sunday's women's basketball game, where our Aggies will take on the Cards, the Cardinals. I just got a message from Kelty Jones, longtime Davis resident, former school board member, who told me that if she still lived in town, she would surely attend the game, but she would root on her Cardinals, her alma mater. Well, evidently there are going to be a lot of people thinking just like Kelty Jones about Sunday's game. So if you care about your Aggies, perhaps you will vote with your feet and stomp your way right over to the Ark so you can enjoy that game. And then in the first half hour of the show, we heard from Eric Paul Schaefer. He is also an Aggie, having graduated with a PhD in American Literature in 1991 from this fine institution. And he has a new book out to go along with his five books of poetry. He's got a new novel. It's called Burn and Learn. Thanks to all of you as well for listening to this week's show. Next week, we will be joined in the studio by Keith Lowell Jensen. He is the local comedian who's got a new CD out. And he's going to be telling us about an upcoming event with a big shot comedian who, when he talked to me on the phone, suggested I really should have known who that guy was. Don't remember his name offhand, but he'll be appearing here next week for the comedy edition. Last week, theater. This week, fiction. Next week, comedy. The comedy edition.